Hello, Royals fans, and welcome once again to the podcast Inside Athletics. I'm Dave King, Director of Athletics here at EMU, and we're going to cover a variety of topics this week. I hope you're back onto a cycle of catching these on Friday afternoons or whenever it is that you get to listen to them. I'm happy to be back again. There is an article on our website, emuroyals.com, that highlights some of the purpose that I feel we do this for, and hopefully it connects you to some inside information, and it helps to give you perhaps a different perspective. Anyone who supports athletics and is involved in it, particularly here at EMU, I think wants to buy into and wants to know about all of the other things that are going on besides just the results of the games. And that's what I'm trying to do, to give you a little bit different perspective, because we all know that the perspective that is out there is sometimes jaded by negativity and by specific instances that have happened. I'm going to talk about that in a little bit. The first thing I want to talk to is last week I mentioned to you some of the new things that were going on. I got a report today from our coach, men's soccer coach Roger Mast, that they were out celebrating at Dairy Queen because everything was in place for the new bleachers on the turf field. Again, seating 1,000 out there. We do have a roll of padding in front that needs to be put down yet. Came through damage, and we're trying to get that taken care of. But that's going to be a welcome addition, plenty of places for people to sit. We haven't taken away the concession stand, so that's going to be there as well. And we think it'll really add to the venue. Hopefully it'll put some signage on the back, which welcomes you to the EMU campus, since a lot of people come up Parkwood Drive on into the campus, and that'd be a nice welcome sign on the back of those bleachers. So we're excited about that. I also mentioned to you about work that's going to be done on the infield of the baseball field, switching over from Kentucky bluegrass to Bermuda grass. And we're looking for that to be done either the week of the 19th or the 26th, or maybe even into the fall. But it will be done sometime. It has been approved, and we're working at it. And I'm happy today to be joined by our head men's baseball coach, Ben Spotts. And I've asked Ben to stop in and just give, for those of you that are not aware of what the difference is, people have talked about artificial. If you've been to Harrisonburg recently, you'll know that the old Harrisonburg High School was purchased by JMU, and they put a very nice complex over there of baseball and softball fields. And their baseball field is entirely turf, with the exception of home plate and the mound, I believe. No infield dirt, no base paths of dirt anywhere except for at home plate. And there, the artificial turf is brown, so it looks that way, but it's all artificial. So there's always some conversation about going that route. I know when I first got here about 8 or 9 years ago, people were divided as to whether or not the climate and the temperatures and the weather in this area was suitable for Bermuda grass. Now it seems like everybody's going that route. So, Ben, thanks for stopping in here for just a couple of minutes, and tell us a little bit about what you see to be the main advantages, or maybe give a little description of Bermuda grass in case people don't understand what it is and some of the nuances. But what makes it a better playing surface than what the typically would have, especially Kentucky bluegrass?
Well, you know, obviously anyone out there who's played golf and been by a golf course, if you've seen the fairways, that's Bermuda grass. And so it's just a tighter grass that's cut lower to the ground, so you get truer hops, and it plays faster, but you get able to keep the grass cut a little bit lower. And, you know, the nature, one of the things I've learned in this process about the Bermuda grass is that it grows across and crawls when it grows. It doesn't grow up. So the bluegrass we have with the rye mix in it right now kind of grows upwards, like most of us have in our yards, and it can get clumpy and choppy and bouncy and so forth. So one of the good things about Bermuda is it's got a nice flat surface when it grows. Now, you do have to overseed with rye, because if you guys have seen golf courses out there in the wintertime, they can tend to, once you get that first frost, the Bermuda grass will die off. So you got to overseed with rye so you have some green color to it, and it helps hold the Bermuda together during the January, February, March part of the season until that rye comes through. But anyway, so yeah, it's a great service, and I'm excited to get it and appreciative of the administration, obviously Dave, your efforts, as well as the administration above, to make this happen, because it's something that most people in the conference are going to now, just mm-hmm. because of the playing surface.
And what do you recall of all this I mentioned in the beginning, something about that you maybe we didn't have the right climate. Is there a point at which kind of too far north it doesn't – is it because the frost comes too early, or what's the whole deal where you do it?
Yeah, and that was always a concern here, and it's probably been within the last 10 years you could start to do it here in this area. We're kind of on the cusp of what you could or couldn't. And I think that line now, Northern Virginia schools are doing it. I think when you start getting to, you know, a little bit in Maryland, but when you start getting to Pennsylvania, New Jersey, it's still hard to do it, to grow it. But they've come up with a Patriot Bermuda grass probably 8 or 10 years ago, and they've kind of fine-tuned that a little bit now. I think we're going to put down Latitude 36 Bermuda grass. We're going to roll the sod out, which allows it to be grown in this climate. And other than the frost, when you get a little bit of that frost on it, it'll start to brown up a little bit. Other than that, it's a great surface. And one of the things, too, about it is, you know, once you get it established and up and running, it loves the heat. Mm-hmm. And we all know how our yard looks in the middle of July or August when it hadn't rained for 2 weeks. One thing about this, it thrives in the heat and continues to grow, or will shut down a little bit, but doesn't need as much water. And it's disease resistant, too. So one of the things that the grubs we've all heard out there, for some reason, the grubs and what research I've done have not found a liking for Bermuda grass. So hopefully that's something that'll continue.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Some people might say, would ask a question about, you said you have to mow it lower. Probably have to get a different style of mower, I would imagine, to do that. But talk just a little bit about the upkeep. Doesn't need as much water, doesn't need as much care, or does it need that, or fertilizer, et cetera, and all the other things?
Well, I think with the Bermuda, you do have to cut it more often because you want it to keep it tighter. And if you get a couple of days of rain and unable to get on it, it gets kind of bushy, and you have a lot of clippings when you cut it. But you want to keep it cut tighter, and you're probably looking at 3 to 4 times a week to cut it to stay ahead of it. But then as far as, typical fertilization plan is all you really need to do, and you aerate it, once a year or so. And once you do that, then really it doesn't really need to be overseeded, because Bermuda will take care of itself, other than overseeding the rye.
Right.
But the Bermuda grass will take care of itself. And
if I understood you correctly, you put the rye in so that it looks green when you're planting.
You
want to
give it that green color,
right?
Yeah. And plus, since I've done it, one of the persons I've talked to, if you don't put the rye into it, then the Bermuda, well, it's a great surface. It's brown, and you can get chewed up a little bit if you don't have the rye to help hold it together. So,
well, I part of the reason I wanted to bring you on is because once we get to that point, down the road, I don't doubt but what we'll have some people driving by the baseball field on Park Road and say, geez, what happened to your field over there? It's all brown. It died out. What's going on? But I do know that's a piece of the puzzle. So certainly we are excited about it. And I was really pleased to be able to – we fought back and forth for years about what sort of the pothole-ish issues were in the infield, and I assumed we just hadn't been overseeding enough. And then once the guy came in and started to explain that you got these Kentucky bluegrass that sort of grows up in clumps, and so your bumps are in between the clumps and not spread out over there. So we are excited about it, and I know that I guess I got to share this story yet. I remember being down at a game this past spring, and I think it was probably the top of the seventh inning maybe, and ground ball to first base, and I mean, it took an enormously crazy hop. And I saw Ben, I was standing up at the top of the bank, and I would happen to be standing next to the president, Lawrence Worsen Driver, and the provost, Fred Neuser, are big baseball fans. And three of us were standing there, and this bad hop went, and they scored 2 runs. And the first thing Ben did was walk out the dugout and look up to see who was watching. And later he told me that he was the first thing he wanted to look at was to see, make sure that the top dogs were there watching and would see that. So we're really glad to be able to do it. I want to give a shout out to Martin's Quarries in Bechtelsville. Been very supportive in being able to donate us 2 loads of infield mix. We're going to be able to get that. Both of the owners of that are EMU alums and want to help us out. And so we're really pleased about that. That will add to it as well. And when we looked at some of the priorities, we began to realize between Ben and I that maybe a surface was going to be able to be done sooner than the whole dugout, new dugout plans that we have. And actually, to some degree, I know this is stepping out a little bit, but it might even give us a win or two that maybe we didn't have before. So I don't want to throw that too much, but we are excited about it, and I think it's part of Ben's responsibility is taking care of the field, and so we wanted to be able to give him that opportunity to take care of the way that he wants to put the things that are on there that will do the best. So we are looking forward to that, and I wanted to make sure that people understood a little bit about it, particularly in case they looked at it and saw that it was brown.
Well, and if I can say, Dave, here, I just want to thank you again in administration, because I think one of those priorities I had when I was hired and took the job was really to try to address the infield surface at some point, and I'm very grateful that it's happened, you know, after my first year here, because I think it shows a commitment by the program, and I just think anybody who's a true baseball fan, you know, the surrounding things are all great areas, but also the playing surface is the exact tells you how important it is to them. We've all played on good surfaces and bad surfaces, so I think it'll really stress our recruits and our current players have been here to say, hey, look, you know, this surface will be as good as anyone has in the conference. So I'm excited.
My understanding is that there's two ways to do it. One is to put actual turf down to sod it, and the other is just to sprig it and let it go on its own, and we've chosen to sod it. Is that correct?
Yeah, so we've chosen to lay the sod down, so this should be one. I've talked to the company that's doing it's a one-day job. They'll come in the morning and strip all the old sod off, and then regrade the field. The infield area is going to be the skin, the dirt, everything's going to be regraded, taking the lips out, and then they'll roll sod. And then we'll just have to water it hard for 2 days or so, and then let the roots get established, and then let it take off. So I think it'll be a good product.
And that will include one strip around the back of the infield, as I understand it, and one around home plate. So again, if you drive by and you got this brown spot out there in the outfield, you'll know that. Well, hey, Ben, while I have you here, I'm sure some people are sort of wondering, because I get this question every time right about now. Hey, what are the teams going to look like this year? Your first full year of recruiting, what's it been like to be out there on the recruiting trail, and what's it look like in terms of both the quantity and quality of the kids you got coming in, at least as you can tell?
Well,
you'll tell me a lot more after fall ball, I understand, but just give us an update on how the recruiting went this year.
Yeah, we're closing on about a month from starting here. September 15th is my tentative date to start fall ball, so I'm anxious after the first year recruiting, and I've been very excited and you know, coming to a new place to try to figure out how the recruiting and all the nuances go, and I've been excited about the interest we've had and the number of guys we have coming in, because our program was at a point where we needed to get our numbers up, our depth up, our quality up. And, you know, we have a rather large freshman class coming in, and to obviously go with the returners we have coming back. And talent-wise, I mean, I think we've obviously, you know, given ourselves some more depth, and I think we'll have some young guys that will push to be in the lineup and when opportunity arises. And obviously we're still – anybody trying to address your pitching staff, and I think that's something that we've tried to address in this recruiting class to get ourselves more arms and quality arms in that process, because I think as the first year went through, you know, I was very pleased with how we played and competed hard, but we still were probably just a little bit short at times throughout the season. So we're hoping to take the returners who now know what's expected, the new guys coming in who've identified East Midland as a school they want to be and they're excited about the direction of the program, to kind of mesh all those together and pick up where we left off last year. Just add to it, though.
Well, if you can pick up one or two wins from the recruits you got in, and we'll give you one or two from the Bermuda grass, we might be in good shape. I think your number is up, for people who want to know. It's going to be up close to 40, at least to start with.
That's the plan, yeah.
That's certainly a lot higher than we had anticipated, but it was where we knew we wanted to get to. Well, I got a couple of minutes left. I wanted to shift gears a little bit. I'm going to have Ben stay here, because you never know, I might pop a question at him. I've given a lot of thought over the last couple of days to, I guess, the preponderance of our focus in the athletic world on the negative. And most of that comes from A-Rod, baseball situation, PEDs, litigation. I'd love to get into the Johnny Manziel issue, because that's closer to an NCAA and who we are, and a little bit more into there. I'll wait that for a later time. And I certainly don't want to just add to the abundance of hot air that is out there on the talk radio waves. I must confess that I have it on in my car most times in my short drive to work, so I don't listen to it extensively. But I just am at the point where it just seems like we focus on one issue for that day ad nauseum, and it just goes on and on and on and on, and it really begins. I was most interested by the comments that have been coming out from the current baseball players who are saying enough is enough, and at least that's, again, I'm not in the locker room, you're not in the locker room, we go by what the reporters tell us. I understand that, and you can hear the same reporter on any of ESPN's talk radio you want to. They say the same things over and over again. But I do have a sense that the players and the players' union in a baseball situation, in a way, seem to be willing to say enough is enough and try to let's move on. And so I'm not going to get into the analysis of it, other than to say I'm once again saddened by the amount of energy and time and talk that we place on something that is negative to it. I realize it sells ads. I realize it sells popularity. I realize it's supposedly what people want to talk about. But I would certainly hope that we, at this level, Division III level, and perhaps even in general, we can again focus a little bit more. And I think there are more of the players who are saying, you know what, there's a lot of good stuff going on, and all we're doing is focusing on the bad. And there's other records being broken. There's great plays being made. There's unbelievable number of, in baseball anyway, a number of streaks right now. Some teams really getting hot and really playing some exciting ball and all of that, and it all seems to be overshadowed. Certainly not to dismiss the issues that we have within sports, but to also say that whatever we can do to focus on some of the smaller stories, and I'm ready to go start my own talk show, and it would be about nothing than good human interest sports stories. Now, I probably wouldn't last more than a week, but hey, that's beside the point. I like my day job too, so I won't do that. But it just reminds me once again of how our focus is so much on the things that are wrong rather than the things that are right. And I'm hopeful that throughout the coming year, we can continue to focus on that. I must admit that I was contacted by the local newspaper to do an article right after the A-Rod situation started to come to light more and more in the Biogenesis deal and everything else, to sort of talk about what's my perspective on the D3 and the athletes and their use of performance-enhancing drugs or anything like that at all. And so I gave him a few answers. I'm not even sure whether he wrote the article, to be honest with you. And I will switch over here to Ben again because he's still sitting here beside me. And he's worked at Bridgewater College as an assistant coach and also a compliance director there. And I just simply ask you, Ben, the same question that was asked of me. Do I think it's a problem at the Division III level? My response, first of all, was the fact that the study that the NCAA did, that was a voluntary study that was done, proved that there wasn't an issue. And so we were not to be spending a lot of money. I talked about the fact that I had a transfer who came here to the university and said to me afterwards, when I talked to him after he was here a year or two, he said, hey, there's a few people probably doing some stuff, but he said it's not worth the amount of money it would take to test everybody to do that. Now, I know at Bridgewater College, they started a testing program, so I kind of just open it up to you to say what would be your response to a reporter who said, do you think it is a problem? And if it is, why is it? Or if it isn't, why isn't it a problem at Division III?
Well, I would think, you know, obviously that the PEDs being in the news a lot lately, and when you put it in a Division III perspective, you know, I really don't think it's a problem. It's very widespread. Obviously, there's individual cases on each campus where that may be the case, and I just think either the availability of it, either I'm naive to how easy it could be to get, or what is out there. You know, I think there's. I just don't think it's such a big deal at smaller schools. Now, I do think maybe there's less chance of getting caught, mm-hmm. So maybe that's why some people may be willing to take the risk. But I do think, obviously, as we've talked about, on a smaller campus, and if someone all of a sudden changes physically with the way Division III athletics are, changes physically, huge changes in a 4 or 6 month period, it may make you raise your eye a little.
Well, I thought about it the other day. Somebody told me that they were in a local restaurant here. I forget exactly where it was. Oh, no, I guess it was a Kmart. Someone, one of our coaches, said they were at Kmart, and they got in line, and it looked like the whole JMU football team was in there purchasing something. And this coach said, these guys were huge. Now, if you're in that kind of environment and everybody's sort of that physicality, I could see where it isn't. But as I mentioned to the reporter, I mean, the one or two incidents we had here there where we suspected, we didn't test at the time, but we suspected was, I mean, somebody comes back after a summer and they've bulked up to, you know, 220 pounds or, you know, they're massive. We had another kid that broke out in acne all over the face. And so you knew that there was something that was being placed in the body. And so it becomes more obvious. The one thing that I would say is probably most probable would be trying to recover from an injury if you had that access, because, you know, we already know that kids don't want to report when they're hurting. They don't want to report when they've had their bell rung because of the new concussion stuff. So I can understand that when you get to this level, even here at Division III level, I mean, you as a coach, kid gets injured, he's on the shelf, you got to move ahead with everybody else. And so if there was that availability of someone hanging around saying, hey, you know, you could really recover faster by doing this, I think there might be a possibility. So I would agree with you, Ben. I think that there's probably certainly less of it going on. I don't think we're trying to be naive about it. I think that you're right. There isn't as much checking of it. Some schools are starting to go to mandatory random, some mandatory everybody. So there isn't as much checking, so that might lend people to do it more. But on the other hand, if someone really is impacted by that and really changes something about their demeanor, it's much more known here. I mean, the coach knows the kids a whole lot more than what they do at a Division I level when you got 120 football players or whatever the case is, and you're less in touch with the head coach and some of those types of things. So I thought I would at least approach that one because it is a baseball thing. And you're here as a baseball coach. That's where it seems to be. There's also a lot of talk out there right now that baseball is the only one that's dealing with it, that it might have been, I can't imagine, with a grueling NBA schedule that there isn't something going on out there, but they haven't gotten to the testing piece. So once again, I'm ashamed that it's a part of the sports scene, but it's something we have to deal with and we'll be a part of it. We at EMU do not have a testing policy. We do reserve the right of all students, athletes or non-athletes, to ask for testing or to require testing if suspicion is there. And that's the way we have operated all the time. I think our money can be well spent a whole lot more on things like Bermuda grass and other that than to test for the one or two kids that might be trying to do something, and our staff are much more in tune with it. So, well, those are a couple of updates I wanted to give you on the baseball field, and then also try to touch a little bit. I would like to discuss a little bit some of the aspects of the Johnny Manziel issue as it would relate to NCAA sports. I certainly don't want to indicate that at Division III level we're totally immune from all of those types of activities that go on and the ways in which our athletes are treated. Certainly it's nothing like the Division I. I understand that. But there are a lot of things that have come out of that story that I think are very interesting and could be analyzed and applied to the Division III level in terms of how we approach life, how we approach sports, and what role it plays in our life. But we'll hold that one for another time. Thanks for joining this week. We look forward to another weekly podcast next week. And as we roll in, student athletes will be coming in here on the 18th, and we're ready to kick off. We'll try to give you some season previews here in the next couple of weeks. Make sure you pay attention to all the developments. There's starting to pop stories up right and left right now on the webpage, so make sure you're checking that out. I just got notice this week that the women's volleyball team got an all-academic award as well. I want to note that, and we'll give you some other updates. So thanks once again for joining this week, and until we talk together next week, please make it a great week.